Ladies and gentlemen, welcome and thank you for joining today's teleconference, Going Against the Crowd, where opportunity meets undervaluation. Today's discussion may contain forward-looking statements. All statements made that are not historical facts are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, and actual results may differ materially. Please refer to ARS's most recent outlooks and the ARS website for important legal and disclosure information. With that, I will turn the call over to Andrew Schmeidler. Andrew, please go ahead.
Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate that. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Andrew Schmeidler, and welcome to the ARS Investment Partners conference call. Today, we wanted to share with you our thoughts, this time through a Q&A format. We've been getting some great questions from clients recently during these volatile weeks. We wanted to address them more broadly since we believe that it'll cover on what's on many people's minds. I'm going to be asking questions to my partners, Arnold Schmeidler and to Ross Taylor, who will be expressing our collective views. I'd like to start first with asking Arnold the first questions here. Good afternoon, Arnold.
Good afternoon, Andrew and everyone on the call.
So the first question is as follows. What's been driving the recent pullback in the markets, and where do we go from here?
Great question, and that gets to the heart of the issue. This is one of the best times in a long time for an investor to be investing money. What's gone on is the following. We started the year with a big tax reduction for corporations, a big increase in corporate earnings, a very positive market outlook, benign interest rates, benign inflation rates, and an economy that was slated to continue to have a strong 2018 and a slower growth in 2019. Slower growth meant we would still grow and we would have lower earnings growth, but nevertheless earnings growth. So what happened was that Mr. Powell, the chairman of the Fed, raised interest rates not too long ago and then indicated that in 2019 there were going to be probably 4 interest rate increases, because as the economy grew, we wound up with unemployment dropping below 4%, and the Fed was concerned that inflation was going to become a bigger feature of the environment, and they wanted to get ahead of it. So he let the markets know that 4 interest rates for next year were likely in the cards. We actually understood what he said, but we made the mistake of not realizing enough that the market was going to react very negatively to a forecast that was based upon today's assessment with no knowledge about what 2019 was actually going to reveal, what kind of an economic outlook we were going to have. Because at the same time, we had the increasing frictions with China over trade, which assured something of a slowdown to begin with. So between Mr. Powell's remarks, the China trade frictions, which are with us, political situations both here and abroad, foreign economies weakening and foreign exchange weakening, making the dollar strong, with capital flowing to the United States, the markets were suddenly confronted with an outlook that was not as pure as it was for 2019 at the beginning of 2019. So the upset that developed, we all have observed, has created a significant pullback in share prices. And for a firm like ours that wants to invest in the best businesses at the best prices, this is really a significant opportunity to have the investments that benefit from the secular trends at much better prices, and in many cases paying strong dividends and rising dividends at prices that we could not achieve before. So what's driven this pullback is a change in the narrative about the outlook, because nothing's changed in terms of the economy slowing next year, corporate profits still rising, but the focus of the market has suddenly become quite different. And that's created the buying opportunity which we see today, and where we believe it's been significantly overdone in the cases of many companies. And this is not unusual because behavior is such that everybody turns very, very positive when the markets are going up, and then it gets too exuberant, and then everybody turns very negative when the markets are going down, and they forget to focus on the fundamentals, but only on the market. And because we're in an auction market where the fewest buyers actually create the best prices because the demand, the selling pressure is much greater than the buying pressure, that's when you get the ideal prices, which by definition, fewer people are willing to take advantage of. And that's where we come in to define this as a big opportunity for us.
Great, thank you for that. The next question is as follows. What are the important investment trends and themes, and are they still in place?
The important investment trends are the secular trends, and by definition, they are in place, if not accelerating. One of the most important trends today is the technology trend with the movement to 5G. All of us use fourth generation telecommunications, networking, but 5G is a revolution. And it's going to involve the expenditure over the next several years of anywhere up to $1 trillion. The United States wants to be the leader in 5G. Don't forget we invented the internet in the first place. We want to be the leader. There's competition with China, for example, but we are in a position today of putting 5G, establishing 5G into the economy, with Verizon and AT&T in five cities now this quarter. And what that really means is that the speeds and the ability to affect every single industry in a very positive way in terms of productivity, speed, processing power, storage, it's going to be a major change. For example, 5G is about 100 times faster than 4G. So what that means is that we'll be able to download in 8 seconds what takes us now sometimes 10 minutes. The impact on this is going to be broad. It's going to be expensive in terms of investment capital, and it's going to benefit many, many companies and transform many industries. Another area that we see secular growth is the healthcare area. And by the way, 5G will have a major impact on healthcare because of all the research that's done with computers processing, which has to be enhanced enormously to deal with all the variables that have to be dealt with. 5G is going to have an impact on healthcare. And healthcare means that millions of Americans who are not getting the kind of healthcare they can get will represent a market that will be independent of the growth of the economy itself. And by the way, 5G and technology, cybersecurity, all of these elements are independent of whether the economy grows more slowly or more rapidly. Another area of very great importance for us as a nation is the defense area, where leading defense companies are selling for literally 25 to 50% of their growing backlogs. Another area of importance, and you saw some recent press reports about it in the papers, is infrastructure spending, where states and local governments are doing some very significant financing to invest in infrastructure, and there are some very interesting opportunities in that area as well. So putting it all together, we would then add those companies that pay good dividends, and I mentioned AT&T and Verizon a moment ago. AT&T has a 6.5% yield. Verizon has over a 4% yield. And these companies have raised their dividends every single year since 2004 and 2006. So those are some of the areas that we find extremely opportunistic.
That's very helpful. Thank you for that. Ross, I'd like to turn to you now for the next couple of questions. First, given the recent changes in market conditions, what are we doing from a portfolio perspective?
Well, first, Andrew, in early October, early in the quarter, we started to build up cash to allow us to take advantage of opportunities if they cropped up. As it turned out, a great many have occurred, and we've begun to put money back to work in recent weeks. Also, given the time of year and the fact that we've generally, in most accounts, realized capital gains, we've been looking at holdings that we have at a loss or where at least a tranche is at a loss to decide if it makes sense for us to take some or all of that loss. We've also reduced or eliminated several positions where we felt the characteristics of the stock are out of sync with what our outlook indicates are most likely going to be those traits favored by the market in coming months. On the other side of that coin, we've added a number of names that more closely fit the characteristics that we're looking for, as well as where we see strong fundamental, technological, or operational trends that we believe will drive better than expected top and bottom line performance over coming months. On the tactical basis, you should notice going forward, and you should notice in this quarter that we've been more incremental in both our buying and our selling. Getting into a name, we're going to take smaller initial weights and build the position over time, trying to take advantage of market weakness or simply giving a stock a chance to season at a price rather than aggressively building it to start. Obviously, there'll be circumstances where we feel the valuation is so extremely undervalued that we'd be more aggressive, but on the most part, we'll be incremental. On the sell side, I would expect that you're going to see more partial sales for some of the same reason, instead of just one big sale at the end when a stock has hit our target. By doing this on the sell side, we'll be better positioned to take advantage of periods like the one we've been in for the last 6 weeks or so, where the market has switched to a risk-off mindset, despite the fundamental companies making up the portfolio actually continuing to operate at a very high level.
Great. Thank you, Ross. The next question, Ross, would it be, can you please explain the characteristics of what we're looking for in companies that should make for successful investments in this environment?
Now, as Arnold mentioned, we're investors, and that means we're looking to buy into businesses that we feel are undervalued. We're not playing stocks for short-term moves or market psychology. Arnold also mentioned that after Chairman Powell's comments in early October, the market's view of the near-term and intermediate-term outlook changed drastically. The question we've asked ourselves and continue to ask ourselves is whether this shift is a permanent shift or if it's transitory, and whether the damage that's being done to specific stocks reflects a change in their fundamental outlook or is just the result of short-term trading dynamics. On a stock-specific level, we're looking for companies with strong balance sheets and excellent free cash flow, because these two factors allow companies to return capital to shareholders, be it through dividends, share buybacks, or debt paydowns. We like to find companies that operate in unique and defensible business niches that will help them be insulated from competition, and we're looking to invest with managements who have shown both operational talent and a track record for working on the best interests of their shareholders. We're focusing our research efforts right now by looking for companies that we believe will benefit in the major trends that Arnold just mentioned, 5G, defense, healthcare, specialized technologies such as OLED and computer memory, as well as special situations.
Thank you, Ross. Arnold, the next question I turn to you, and it's as follows. Can you explain or describe in particular some of the companies that are benefiting from 5G and related technologies around that?
Sure. Ross just mentioned OLED. OLED is the stock symbol for a company called Universal Display. Universal Display, what they do is they make the display they have the patents for the manufacturer display for TVs, for all kinds of portable devices. It's state of the art. The reason it's state of the art, aside from the clarity of the picture, whether it's on your iPhone or whether it's on a TV, the fact that it can only be put on plastic, it could only be manufactured on plastic, which means that a new generation of phones, for example, will be coming out that are foldable and bendable. If any of you have seen an OLED TV, it's an extraordinary picture. There are about 2.5 million TVs, OLED TVs, sold today, out of a total of 250 million annually. This market is expected, just for television, is expected to grow to 10 million. Universal Display is a debt-free company with almost a half a billion dollars in cash. They've been around for about 20 years. A lot of the technology originally came from Kodak, which they've refined. It's really a group of scientists. But OLED is a $4.6 billion company, that is Universal Display, debt-free, and with products that will affect the entire lighting industry, whether it's automobile consoles, whether it's taillights. It's most efficient. The reason it's most efficient is that an electric current going through these lighting pixels will be converted to almost 100% light. Today, LEDs are 75% heat, 25% light. What that means is the battery life of all our devices using OLED will be extended dramatically. And when we talk about 5G, where we're going to use 5G for more processing, more data, more retrieval, we're going to be using more battery power. So this is a key technology, and Universal Display, with a 4,800 patent position, 4,800 patents, is the world's leader and only company responsible for organic light-emitting diodes, which is the next generation. Another example is Micron. Memory is going to be continuing to be key. The latest memory chips, the latest chips in technology, will come out with 7-nanometer line widths. The circuit will be 7-nanometer wide. To put that into perspective, a human hair is between 80,000 and 100,000 nanometers in width. We're talking about 7-nanometer chips, which means, again, much more processing power, much less draw on battery power. Micron is a debt-free company, net debt-free. They have a cash flow generation of about $10 billion. They're buying back shares, and they are one of the most important memory producers on the planet. So it is currently selling today, believe it or not, at about 3x cash flow from operations. What that means is if you bought the business today, if you could buy the whole corporation, you'd get your money back in 3 years and you'd be left owning the company.
Thank you for that. Ross, the next question turns to special situations. Can you describe a couple for us?
One of the ones we put into place in the third quarter and have added to recently is Newell Brands. Newell is what I would call a classic special situation. It has a 4.2% yield. It sells at 9.4x this year's expected earnings. It's the company that owns such brands as Rubbermaid, Papermate, and Coleman. It got over-leveraged several years back when it made an acquisition of Jarden Corporation. And at about the same time, e-commerce started to disrupt their markets. This year, under pressure from activist investors, including Carl Icahn, the company announced plans to divest roughly one-third of its sales base. It's going to use the expected $10 billion in proceeds from the sales of these businesses to pay down debt and buy back stock. When the program is completed, debt should be down from about $10 billion to neighborhood of $7 billion. It's already fallen to just over $8.4 billion as of the last quarter. And the share count outstanding for the company could shrink by as much as 50% as they put the excess cash from the debt pay down to work paying down or buying back shares. What's going to come out of this process is a leaner, much more focused, and financially stronger company. So far, as I mentioned, the asset sales and debt pay down have been going according to plan. And interestingly, their e-commerce business is actually carrying better than corporate average margins now. Another special situation is on the other side of the spectrum. It's Zscaler. It's an early stage growth company. Zscaler is in the cybersecurity sector where they are Microsoft's provider of choice for those using their Azure cloud services. Top line for Zscaler is growing at roughly a 40% clip. Stocks like Zscaler can be hard to value in the short term, but over time they mature into powerhouses in their space. And that's what we're looking for with Zscaler. We think it's a very interesting niche, and quite honestly, we would never be surprised if a large player in internet security were to reach out to acquire them, given their position with Microsoft.
Thank you, Ross. Turning to the next question, if you can also give us a couple of examples of investment opportunities that we're seeing in the healthcare space.
Well, the first one I'm going to mention, Andrew, is Amgen. Amgen is considered by many an old-school biotech name and thus has been relegated by most investors to being an afterthought in a sector that's filled with newer and frequently a lot sexier stories. But we see a lot to like in Amgen. First, the company has a deep pool of both current drugs in the market and promising and even groundbreaking new ones on their way through development. One such new product is a migraine treatment they have that can actually eliminate or meaningfully reduce the frequency of migraines for many patients. By having numerous shots on goal, Amgen reduces the risk that any one initiative fails to get FDA approval or that a product in the market fails to get traction. Additionally, the company recently took a step that we think could become a template for other drug companies facing growing public and congressional pressure to cut drug prices. What they did is actually cut the price of one of their important new products down to the net price they had been receiving from the middlemen who were buying it. This increases the attractiveness of the drug to their customers, the end customers, as well as plan sponsors, while not actually impacting Amgen's own economics on the drug. In fact, by reducing prices, they've actually been able to drive sales higher, making the company better off for the effort. One of the things that we think helps separate Amgen from younger biotech stocks is that they, because they have a solid base of revenues, they are able to generate free cash flow, which allows them to both buy back stock and pay a dividend. At the current price, Amgen's yielding about 3%. And the second name in the healthcare space that is once again on the other side of the spectrum, it's an early stage growth company, is Biohaven. Biohaven's a biotech company that has a very promising portfolio. The first drug to market we think is likely to be their migraine treatment that appears to be both very effective at reducing pain to manageable levels as well as reducing occurrence rates for those who use it. This drug also appears to have the potential to help manage pain and from other causes, which could become very interesting as things develop. Biohaven wants to be a drug developer, not so much a marketer, so we would expect to see them undertake steps to monetize their drugs either just before or soon after they receive FDA approval.
Thank you, Ross. Stepping back just for a moment, the next question, Arnold, I'll ask of you, which is, why is it not justified to more aggressively pull back from equities when the current investment environment is unstable?
That's an interesting question. The fact is that when markets have behaved as they have recently, there has never been a market pullback of any real dimension where you did not have an activist investor or an actual corporations coming and taking advantage of the very low prices compared to what they had had before to acquire companies and to build up their own competitive positions. And since we're not focusing on trying to predict the market, nobody does that. Nobody can do that. But we're saying let's buy the best businesses that are the most attractive ones to own. So it would not surprise us if any of the companies that we have in portfolios today would be subject to acquisition. The other point is that it's very important not to lose sight of what companies themselves are doing. If we look at IBM's recent Red Hat acquisition proposal, which happened while the market was declining, the shares they're paying $190 a share for Red Hat. Cisco, which we are very much in favor of with a 3% yield, also just recently made an acquisition. And by the way, it is a debt-free company. Cisco is a debt-free company with about $47 billion in cash, about $20 billion in debt, 3% yield. So we're not trying to so-called play the market, forecast the market. And when we talk about instability in the environment, there is really never a time when you can't say that there isn't the potential for instability. It's only that the focus has changed. Where everybody was saying, look, we're going to have a good growth in 2018, we'll have slower growth, but slower growth in 2019, that's still the case. We do not see any of the ingredients for a recession over the next couple of years that are in the market today or in the economy today. The outlook for interest rates is relatively benign. The outlook for inflation is certainly benign. We have not had an increase in producer prices over 2% any time in the past 10 years, with the exception of one period of about 6 months. In other words, inflation stays low. This means that corporate profits will continue to rise, and the ideal scenario for equity investing is rising corporate profits, low inflation, and relatively low interest rates. That's why what we were saying earlier, when Powell made his comments about raising rates four times next year, major upset for the market, which has helped to, in large part, to create this opportunity for all of us.
Okay, thank you for that. And if we can conclude then with this last question, which is an important one, Ross, as well. Given the pullback in the markets, can you talk about the value in the portfolios and how we think about the upside over the next 12 to 36 months?
Certainly. As Arnold and I have mentioned numerous times today, we're investors, not traders. We're looking to own shares of businesses for the long term, not trade on a day-to-day basis. We believe that our portfolios are well positioned and offer attractive upside at current prices. We work with two primary investment strategies. Our more growth-oriented strategy is undervalued by nearly 30% versus what analysts currently think the stocks should trade at over the next 12 months, while our more income-oriented strategy is undervalued by roughly about 15% using the same measure. Now, analysts are not always right, and they're not always particularly timely, but we see what they see. Even if they're off by a meaningful measure in their expected returns for these stocks, there's going to be substantial upside for our portfolios from current levels. Each of our portfolios is carrying an adjusted price-earnings ratio in line with that of the market, while offering growth that is as good as or better than the market, in some cases substantially better. In summary, we like what we see in our portfolios when we look out over the next 6 to 12 months. We think we're well positioned to take advantage of the current market environment, and we expect that we will prosper in the one we think we'll see in 2019.
Well, thank you, Ross, and thank you, Arnold, for sharing our thinking. We've been receiving quite a few questions and are still getting them in today, so we will be getting back to you, and please also don't hesitate to give us a call if you wish to follow up after this as well. So to wrap up, this is a very good time to be putting money to work and to add to your account if you can. And as you've heard, there are quality companies that are at attractive valuations and are quite well positioned over time. An environment where there's discomfort and a feeling of uneasiness in the markets is often what it takes to create the values that we're currently seeing. Investing through these periods is fundamental to generating attractive investment returns. We thank you for taking the time to join us on this call and for the trust and the confidence that you place in us. We also appreciate the friendships and the many friends and acquaintances that you have referred to us over the years. Helping people and institutions preserve and build capital is what we're about. As always, we welcome referrals for those of you who think would benefit from our service. In the meantime, and importantly, we want to wish you all very happy holidays, happy and healthy and a prosperous new year. A good day. Michelle?
Thank you for joining today's teleconference, ladies and gentlemen. A replay of today's teleconference will be made available to you via email. Once again, thank you for joining today's teleconference, and the call has now concluded, and you may now disconnect.